Welcome to the Business of Story, where we connect you with the leading minds in the art of business storytelling. Learn from best-selling authors, Hollywood screenwriters, makers, content marketers, and brand raconteurs on how to craft and tell compelling stories that sell. The Business of Story is brought to you by Emma, which provides innovative email marketing tools and services that drive brilliant results. And by Convince and Convert, digital marketing advisors and counselors to leading brands and organizations worldwide. Convince and Convert helps you gain and keep your customers online. Here's your host, Park Powell.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Business of Story. Park Howell here. And do we have a story-filled show for you today? Today's not going to be about actually building a story, but gathering a story. Interview techniques that you can use, whether you've got to interview your CEO, the C-suite, customer service, clients, customers themselves, whomever, to be able to find the nuggets within those stories that you can use to craft and tell, of course, a compelling brand story that sells. And our guest today is a 9-time New York Times bestselling author, former associate editor of Sports Illustrated, and I'm telling you, this guy can tell a story. I saw him at the National Speakers Association Influence 16 conference in Scottsdale a month or so ago, and he was gripping from the moment he stepped on the stage, and the stories that he had to share about his experiences being really a phenomenal writer, author. This guy has written, I think, some 25-some books. I'm going to actually jump over to his website before I even tell you who he is, but look at some of the names this guy's worked with. So he's been hanging around folks like Michael Jordan. He spent the last few weeks with Walter Payton, wrote an amazing story, a book actually, his autobiography called Never Die Easy, written during the last weeks of his life. Never Die Easy chronicles every stage of the life of Walter Payton. Who else he's got in here? Tug McGraw, the famous pitcher. You gotta believe my roller coaster life as a screwball pitcher and a part-time father and my hope-filled fight against brain cancer. I mean, the list goes on and on. He's written It's Not About the Truth, the untold story of the Duke lacrosse case and the lives it shattered. How about Tarnished Heisman? Did Reggie Bush turn his final college season into a six-figure job? Oh, and he's got some real legends in here, such as John Wooden, A Game Plan for Life, The Power of Mentoring. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And when I was at the National Speakers Association meeting, I cornered him after sitting through one of his workshops, and I said, Don, would you mind coming on Business of Story? Your storytelling and story gathering talents are just incredible, and I would love to have you on the show. And he happily said yes. So we got a chance to sit down with Don Yeager, one of the most amazing, prolific authors of late, and a guy that is doing a lot of leadership coaching now. But why I really wanted to get him on the show is because we haven't had a story artist like Don where he helps us understand, how do we get the stories? How do we find the stories and gather them from the people that are around us? So on today's episode, I want you to be listening for a few things. Number one, on interviewing, the one thing Don does to break the ice on every interview he has. And he's got a really funny story with Deion Sanders, the famous defensive back / baseball player, on how he attempted to break the ice with Deion and how maybe it didn't go as planned, but gives you some pointers on how to break the ice to loosen up that. Also, we talk a lot about the importance of empathy, and as Don says, understanding the stories of others and how empathy plays such a critical role, especially in our B2B marketing, to humanize what we're trying to do and how we're trying to connect with audiences out there. Also on the show, the three must-have elements in assembling every story. Don breaks it down to three must-have elements. So you're going to want to listen to that. Jot those down and see how you can start using them in your story crafting and interviewing and gathering right after this episode. And finally, Don has one question. He has a suggestion that find the one question that will benefit you as the interviewer. So I want to say that again. Find the one question that will benefit you in every single interview. Don has one. It's brilliant. And in fact, I even used it on him at the very end of the show. And you might even find his answer to that question kind of surprising, as I did. So anyway, without further ado, let's get Don Yeager, an amazing author, bestseller, nine-time bestseller, 25 books out there, former associate editor for Sports Illustrated, Don Yeager, with us today on Business of Story. I'm just delighted to have him here.
Hey, Don, welcome so much to Business of Story. It's great to have you here.
Park, thank you so much. What an honor.
Well, I had the privilege of hearing you speak recently out here in Phoenix at the National Speakers Association, their Influence 16 conference, and how you commanded the stage blew me away with your keynote. And of course, the story that you shared there, the couple of stories, but the one in particular really blew me away. And then I had a chance to go to your workshop, and really interesting to me on a number of different levels. As you know, Business of Story is about connecting story artists with business leaders and communicators around the world. And so you, I think, are our first author here who's written, 25 books and nine-time New York Times bestseller. So I couldn't think of another story artist better than you to have on today's show. So welcome.
Thank you. I have to tell you, you referenced the speech at NSA. The idea of actually speaking to a room loaded with speakers was one of the single most intimidating moments of my young speaking career. I've been doing this for 8 years now, and it was intimidating. So thank you for the kind words. I really appreciated it.
Oh, I just love the story. And remind me, I will share one of my great, great sports stories. I was not an athlete, but I tried to be later in the show. And maybe you can use it in one of your engagements, because I fell flat on my face and it was a lot of fun in the process. But you have a tremendous background. Writing came up still, I think, currently an associate editor for Sports Illustrated. Can you give us a little bit about your background, and how does a guy get to writing 25 books?
Sure. Like most things that I think you'll find, it's interesting. One of the things I've learned about most people whose stories I try to pull from them is that some of the best things that happen to them happen by accident. As wonderful as we want to all be about let's have a game plan. Let's build out a model of here's what we're going to achieve in this window of time. Most of the great things happen by accident, and that was certainly true for me. I was a high school kid who signed up to be part of the ROTC program at my high school because I thought a career in the military was my destiny. And I got there, and the night before school started, the counselor called, and not enough kids signed up, so they canceled the program. But they threw me on the student newspaper, and said, "Let's see what happens." And I realized that I enjoyed asking questions and telling stories. That went on to become my degree at Ball State University, and then I worked for several newspapers, and while working for one of them, I had an opportunity to write my first book, and I realized that each time I got a chance to write longer form journalism, it allowed me to express myself better, tell better stories, ask better questions, and so I did my first book while working for a newspaper, and then went to work for Sports Illustrated, wrote a handful of books while there. I did take an early retirement package from them a number of years ago, several years ago, after being there 12 years. But I continue to do one book a year, and now I do between 60 and 80 keynotes every year.
Wow. So before you had your call to adventure into that newspaper in high school, were you doing much writing? Did you consider yourself a storyteller at all, or did the universe just kind of plop you there and you grew out of that?
I probably was more of a little budding entrepreneur. My dad was a preacher, so I guess you could say the storytelling is in the family, right? My dad was a Methodist preacher, and I had my mom joked all the time. I grew up in Hawaii, and I built actually a little church in the backyard of our house. Largely because I loved the business model that my father executed on, where he prayed for people and then he passed an offering plate. And I thought that was genius, right?
People have been doing that for centuries, Don.
Yeah. Yes. So I used to make the neighborhood kids come over on mornings of tests in our elementary school, and I would pray for them and then take their lunch money.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Storytelling and doing all that probably does run in the Running the gene pool.
Running the family. Now, were you always a great lover of sports, or did that kind of happen by accident that you got into writing sports, Sports Illustrated, and so many books about great, great sports heroes?
No, I was an athlete and enjoyed athletics a lot. It was my expression, my place to compete and enjoy myself. I wasn't a very good athlete, but I was competitive enough to appreciate what it took, and so that allowed me to understand not just how much I enjoyed the journey that other people are on. And that's, I think, a big piece of being able to tell someone else's story is to be able to appreciate what they've got to put up with to do what they do. And I think if you don't fully appreciate what someone else is struggling with to become world class, then I don't know that you can fully tell their story.
It's interesting. I was in a cab recently from SeaTac Airport to my folks' house out in Woodinville, Washington, just north of Lake Washington, up in Seattle area. And the cab driver, and I think he was might have been Indonesian. We were talking on the way from the airport to my folks' home, and he asked what I did, and I explained advertising, marketing, but really focused on business storytelling. And his eyes lit up, and he said to me, "Do you know what every great story begins with?" And I waited, and I go, what? He said, empathy. And I think that's what you're talking about right there, I guess, is appreciate what others are going through so that you can connect with their journey and tell a story that they can relate to.
I got to tell you what, I want to hear the story of that cab driver. I hope you got it before it was over.
Interestingly enough, I was in that cab for 30 minutes, and it was the last 2 minutes before we got to my folks' house. And so, you know, he spoke very broken English. So, you know, he was an immigrant, had not been here a long time. But it was just the way he lit up in that universal sense of empathy. You have to have empathy if you're going to be a storyteller.
I tell you what, and he is a man of great wisdom.
Yes, absolutely. You have had a chance, of course, to be around some really phenomenal athletes and actually write their stories. And you've got a new book out, I guess relatively new. In it, you talk about the 16 characteristics of greatness. And I was going through your website, checking it out, and I just loved it. And I thought, what a great platform to take the stories from these athletes, these people that, you know, the Michael Jordans of the world that people think, oh, he was so gifted. But yes, he was talented and he had a gift, but man, he outworked everybody else around him. Would you mind going through just a couple of these 16 characteristics of greatness, and so that us business leaders and communicators can kind of think about how we might use those in approaching our stories?
Sure. Sure, I will tell you. So that book and that entire discussion grew from we mentioned my father earlier, and when I was graduating from college and heading to my first job at a newspaper in Texas, I stopped and spent a few days at home, and my father pulled me aside. And he had one of those moments that you couldn't pay for. And he said, you know, by the way, son, I know you're going to get a chance because of the career you've chosen to spend time in the presence of many extraordinary people. And he said, as a journalist, you'll be just given the opportunity to sit with them and ask them questions. And he said, I want to challenge you to always find one question, find something that you will ask them that will benefit you. So it doesn't matter who you are. I want you to be able to find a question that will benefit you. And so the question I chose was, if you could name for me a habit or a characteristic that you believe separated you from everyone else that you competed against, what would that habit be? What would that characteristic be? And so that's what, and I, over the course of a lifetime, I've interviewed 2,500 people, asked them that question. I've kept their answers in a series of notebooks, and that's what led to that book. And the number one answer that comes up among these great winners is that they, at some stage in their life, learned to hate losing more than they love winning. They expect to be successful, and so success doesn't give them the thrill it gives some people, right? It's failure. It's the idea of losing that drives them. And the answer to all of, how do you learn that is what I was trying to drive from them. Okay, I get that. It's a great phrase. How can I put that into play in my life? How can I make myself do that? And the answer was pretty simple. And it was that if you take excuses off the table, if you stop making excuses every time you fail, if you stop blaming someone else every time something doesn't go your way, you will learn how to hate losing more than you love winning. Because as long as you can blame somebody else for your failure, you'll never own it and you'll never hate it. And so again, one of the things that when I transitioned from being a writer to a speaker, I had to learn how to tell these stories in a way that would make an audience sit and be raptly attentive. That's your goal, right? Mm-hmm. And so the story I used in this one was a lesson I had while working with Michael Jordan, where he invited me to an old man basketball camp, and at one stage he invited a handful of us to get up and play him one on one. And I was one of those he chose, and I scored on him. I actually won this competition with Michael Jordan. So I could tell that story. It's funny. It's got some really great, you know, dialogue between Michael and I. But at the end, when I asked Jordan, why was he so bothered by the fact that I scored on him? Other than the fact that I scored on him, his answer was that, you know, that he, early on in his life, this habit had taken root and was what he believed the greatest separator between him and everybody else, is that winning was a byproduct of showing up. He believed losing at anything had to hurt, and it only hurts if you don't have somebody to blame. And so he quit making excuses early on in his life, and he believed that that was the mind shift that allowed him to be extraordinary. And the upside to telling that story to people is you can envision it. A, I have pictures of me scoring on Michael Jordan. Did I mention I scored on Michael Jordan?
A couple of times.
I have pictures of it kind of on the slides behind me as I'm telling the story.
Well, we'll post that in the show notes so everyone can see it.
But the best part about it is that, so not only can you see it happening, but then you can imagine the conversation, and you can understand from Michael Jordan how he used that habit to make him better, right? And then you can learn, okay, that's how he did it, and it had nothing to do with his physical gift, which is really important, right? You have to make your stories relatable to the audience. If I'd have told you that what allowed Michael Jordan to be the greatest of all time was his 42-inch vertical leap, you can't do anything about your vertical leap, right? But you can think about how I can adjust my mindset. So the key to good storytelling is, I agree with your cab driver, it's empathy. Starts there, an understanding of their story. But then it gets to, can you make your story relate to the people that are listening to it? Can they use it? Because the best stories are stories people can use.
So many of your books are about the tales and the biography. Peyton's book.
Walter Peyton.
Thank you. What Michael Jordan, Walter Peyton has mixed up there. And, talking about sweetness, covering his background and just everything he went through and what an incredible individual he was. When you're writing those stories, is it enough just to be able to celebrate a life like that, or do you have to go to that next level and put your reader in, you know, that book in the lap of your reader and really try to understand what they are going to take away from it? Because again, it's so hard for us common man to be able to connect with these superstars like that. How do you do that in your stories?
Well, so I think a big piece of it is again, I try not to focus on the superhuman. Even though the superhuman is what might draw people to want to read about them originally, I want to focus on the human, right? I want to focus on, and a big piece of what I think has worked well for me as a storyteller, is that I'm a good story gatherer first. I ask a lot of questions, and I try desperately to practice that very lost art of listening, and not interrupting, and not, I mean, letting people tell their story to me, and as they're telling it, I'm looking for that next great question. What can I learn from them? And in every situation, I would tell you, I think one of the things that I've studied them so deeply that I'll find that question that they might never have been asked before. You know, I shared in Phoenix that, you know, when I was with Walter Payton, I asked Walter one day, I lived with Walter Payton for the last few weeks of his life, last 10 weeks of his life while he was dying, to write his autobiography. Now he was my hero, right? I wanted to be Walter Payton when I grew up.
And what an honor.
And so I get the opportunity to live with my hero, right? To tell his story. And it's very emotional. And, because he invited me only after he knew he was going to die. And we're in this discussion, and I get comfortable enough with him that I was able to ask him the question, you know, Walter, you know, you've won the Super Bowl. You're in the Hall of Fame. You hold the rushing record in the NFL, which he did at the time. You're considered one of the two or three greatest players ever in your profession. If you could trade it all for one day in the future, what would that day be? It's a powerful question, right? And it's not a question most people get.
Right.
And Walter Payton talked about wanting to be there on the day his 13-year-old daughter got married. And it opened up a really powerful discussion. Not one I was able to use in the book because it would have been inappropriate. But it established a relationship between the two of us that allowed me to be so much better at telling his story.
That's just amazing. And it's an incredible book as well. Going back to this idea of being a story gatherer, do you have two or three go-to questions that you begin with just to kind of, you know, lighten things up, loosen it up between you and your subject?
No, I don't have go-tos, but I will tell you, I always, the opening series of questions in almost any place I'll ever go will be fun and funny. Like, I will find something that's happened, you know, something that I've read about my subject, something that I know about them that will allow me to know, because I think people immediately, their emotional dynamic and their willingness to engage, increases dramatically when they're getting into a conversation that'll make them and you laugh, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always about humor early. I'm about emotion late, you know. But I think you have to touch both of those nerves in order to be, in order to truly be able to tell your story or someone else's.
Do you have an example of an interview you might have gone in? And we've all been there when we've got to interview maybe a business leader or a boss or something, and there's tension right away. You're not sure what you're going to get from this person, and you used an icebreaker that you were like on the fence, you know, whether should I really go here or not? And then it either spectacularly failed or it worked wonderfully.
Oh, gosh. So yeah, I have tried to be, I've tried to, again, you know, one of the challenges you have is that you're researching and studying somebody before you get there to meet them and tell their story. And sometimes something that appears funny or appears funny in print, or maybe somebody's written funny about it, they don't find funny.
Mm-hmm.
I had that once with Deion Sanders, the football player, / baseball player. There was a situation where he had, actually, you know, run through a fence while he was in college playing baseball. And reading it looked really funny. I didn't realize how much it had hurt him. And so I was trying to be funny about it, and he totally blanched, and like, the recovery period on that one, was longer, in the discussion.
So, I mean, it physically hurt him, and you took him back to that point of pain in that question, it sounds
correct. As opposed, you know, thinking, man, how extraordinary, you're so powerful. That you can, you know, you run through fences. It was, man, dude, that I got a splinter in my eye. I mean, next thing you know, he's touching his eye. He's, you know, as he's telling me the story, you realize he's, as you said, he's reliving something he would generally not have thought. And anyway, so yes, you've got a great point there, which is, sometimes, you know, I attempt to try to find something that I hope will lighten our conversation early. And every once in a while you'll make a mistake, but yeah.
But isn't that the power of storytelling? I mean, what you said right there, you asked this question, so you basically instigated a story to be replayed in his mind, and emotionally he felt that pain, maybe the embarrassment of it, who knows, but you viscerally took him somewhere, unintentionally, I guess, you know, but that is ultimately what it comes back to, story. In your work with leadership, coaching and training, and all the business leaders that you come in contact with, why, this will be my hypothesis, why are they so typically bad or shy away from telling stories that actually touch an emotion and move people to action?
Because so many of them, you know, it's funny, I do some executive coaching, as you mentioned there, and this is the number one thing that they by and large ask me to help them do is they're trying to figure out how can they tell you, they're so afraid to appear fragile. Because they have been coached their entire life to believe that in order to be a successful leader, you have to be bold and strong and strapping, right? You have to make people, you have to command a room when you walk in, and to ask people to let that guard down for a little bit, to express to others your own humanity, almost seems antithetical to some. But I will tell you, when I have worked with people who have been able to do that, it has changed the dynamic of the way others react to them, specifically those who work with and for them. They feel differently about you because your feet are made of clay, right? There's something special to be said about that.
Mm-hmm. Can you compare some of the top athletes that, you know, you talked about Walter Payton, Michael Jordan, with any of the leaders that you've coached or taught? You saw similar characteristics in them. Now, they weren't doing it on the basketball court or the football field, but they were certainly doing it in the competitive arena of business. Are there one or two, you know, celebrity, for lack of a better term, leaders that you've worked with that you said, man, they are like the Michael Jordan, the Serena Williams of business?
Sure. I would tell you, there's a gentleman that's the CEO of California Pizza Kitchens, named GJ Hart, who is in his ability to be selflessly in service of the people who work with him or for him, is a Michael Jordan type. There's a vice president at Oracle named Bill Swales, who I've spent time with, who, again, same thing. People feel empowered in their presence. And that's what makes a great leader, both in sports and in business, right? Is that people believe they're capable of something greater than they could be on their own. And when you can drive that, and how do you do it? You do it by, gosh, I got to tell you, I want to find your cabbie. You do it by starting with empathy, by understanding the stories of others. That's how you, John Wooden, the great basketball coach at UCLA, I had an amazing opportunity for 12 years. He served as my mentor. I flew to California every other month for 12 years to spend a day learning from Coach Wooden. And one day he said to me, "You cannot lead people you do not know." And that became a real driver for me to realize that it doesn't matter how big or small my company is. I need to know as many of them, as many of the things that they're challenged by. I need to know in order to truly be their leader.
Wow. Fascinating. I'm just making notes here, boy. This is really marvelous. I just finished reading a book, and unfortunately not one of yours, but have you read Boys in a Boat?
I actually was just sent a copy of it a couple of weeks ago. I have not yet read it.
It's remarkable. I think you'll love it. Having, you know, grown up and raised in Seattle, I went to Washington State University, not the University of Washington, which the book is about, the crew there. And I probably had 30 people recommend this book, and I finally cracked it open and read it over the summer. And it's everything you're talking about. They, you know, assembled this 8-man crew from guys just kind of, you know, loggers and farmers and, you know, construction workers from around the Pacific Northwest. And to a man, each one individually was as average as you could possibly imagine, just hardworking. I mean, that's the one thing they had got going for them, really, really hardworking souls. And then they put them in this boat and they got them together. And, of course, they went on to win the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, you know, right before World War II and everything. But it's everything that you're talking about in this. You have to know someone to lead them, and how collectively we're much better than individually. But it's that story that we have to get folks to buy into and believe in, not just buy into, but believe in it for not only the organization, but for themselves, that they can be better than what they ever dreamed they could be when they're all pulling in the same direction.
Yeah. You know, and you see examples of it. Again, if you study, I study mostly leadership in the world of sports, right? That's who I get the great fortune to study. And, you know, my applications are often to the world of business, because that's where I spend most of my time speaking these days. But, you know, one of the great challenges with culture, right, is that our environments are more culturally diverse than they've ever been, right? Your teams have more cultural diversity than ever. And I think that's an amazing gift. But one of the things that does not happen often enough is an expression of the understanding of each other's culture, right? We want everybody to mold to ours, but we don't want to understand theirs. And there's no political statement in this, but one of the things that I love when I see a great leader, like, for example, Greg Popovich, right, the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, he has the most internationally diverse team and the most consistently successful team in the National Basketball Association over the last two decades. But one of the things he is a master at and a genius of is understanding that the way we break down walls is we understand each other better. We know each other's story. So a couple of years ago in the NBA Finals, you know, they're going through practice and they're preparing and they're doing great stuff, and it happened that one of his players is a guy by the name of Patty Mills, who's on the Australian national team today. But he's from Australia, and he's from the Aboriginal tribe there in Australia. And Greg Popovich happened to note that a day during their practice regimen was like Independence Day, like our July 4th, but for the Aboriginals in that country. And he asked Patty Mills to stand up and walk his teammates through what that day means to him and his family and his people. And, you know, the knowledge that the coach had to inspire the conversation allowed people to feel different about their own teammate. And again, this gets to, you cannot lead those who you don't know, and to know them, you need to know their story.
And why then, Don, are we so bad at that? It seems like, you know, why? It seems like it's such an obvious thing to do, and yet how come so many of us don't take the time to do that?
Well, first off, because it takes work. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. It is not the path of least resistance to go sit, learn, understand, appreciate, not argue about, and encourage other people to share with you, right? To not be in judgment of them. That's not easy all the time, right? So, this requires work. And so if you believe that this principle that is key to your, I'm going to guess that anybody listening to this believes what you believe, and that's that the power of story is incredible. If you believe that, then our job is to go inspire others to share theirs.
You know, I always like to say, and it's just, I guess, having some fun with it, but to me, storytelling is the one true superpower that we all possess, because you can actually move people to action. Total strangers, people that live clear around the, you know, on the other side of the world, may not even speak your language, and you might not even be in front of them, but you tell them the right story that gets translated to them correctly online, and you can actually move them to action. If that's not a superpower, I'm not sure what is.
By the way, I just scribbled that down because that's a line I'm stealing. Trust me. But I will tell you, I mean, I agree with you. I speak, I have the good fortune to be a senior fellow at West Point. And when I speak there, I mean, I talk to them about the power of storytelling, and I share with them that to me is one of the great, differentiators between, good and great leaders, right? It's a defining line. Those who can, I say, look, I mean, from Jesus Christ to the guys who were able to convince a bunch of men to jump in an airplane and fly it into the World Trade Center. Those who tell the best stories, those who are able to kind of, to inspire others to action based upon the story you tell them, are those who change the world. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I work with many of the cadets at West Point in the ability to tell their own story.
Well, I'll need to compare some notes with you offline on that. I just 2 weeks ago was out at Andrews Air Force Base, and I was doing a story training workshop for 82 newly minted brigadier generals. They were going through communications and media training in a 4 or 5 day event, and they brought me in for 1 day, and I spent some sessions with them. First time I'd ever been to, you know, that level of hierarchy of the armed services, to be working with generals on how to tell their authentic story. And it was really interesting. I had some completely embrace it, even came up to me afterwards and said, here are some other resources for you to look at. And then I had others that were just completely, I don't know, fearful of it, dismissive of the process. One guy even got up to tell his story, and he sort of made fun of the process through talking about a Flash Gordon story and went on and on. And I just thought it was fascinating. Here are men and women, you know, really at the tops of their games, moving up the ranks. They have been, you know, taught and trained, you know, to take on all the worst circumstances, not show vulnerability. But then when you bring a person in like you or I and say, you know, storytelling is about empathy and it's about vulnerability. And even when I asked at one point in this, I said, let's do it, write a story a little bit about you. I really got pushed back because they said, no, it's never about us. It's always about everybody else. And I said, I understand that, but until you really appreciate and understand your authentic Air Force story, it's hard to then go, you know, and lead others in my experience. And the one question I asked them, Don, in this is, all right, so who's your hero in this story about you? Tell us two things that you're good at, but then share a weakness and amplify that weakness in your story so that we know how you've overcome it, you know, moving forward. And it was a fascinating study on how leaders at that level approach their own stories and storytelling in general.
I believe it. I believe it. I mean, I think, you know, it's a uniqueness, especially to the armed forces. I mean, you know, which is often a very command and control environment, right? Where, you do what I say because I told you to, and your ability to understand who I am and where I come from and all those other things is less relevant. But I actually think as we meld and put together, a force that can take on the world, we have to be able to do that. So I applaud you for investing in them. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Let's take a moment for our sponsors to tell their stories, because without them, we wouldn't be here. And when we come back, let's dive just a little bit deeper into, maybe you can share some of your insights on how we can all become better storytellers in our work as business leaders and business communicators. So Don Yeager, more with Don right after this. Hey, if you like what you're hearing here on Business of Story, then you are going to love Definitive, the email from Convince and Convert that many marketers say is the most useful resource around. Each day, the team at Convince and Convert picks a topic and sends you the 3 best resources ever created about that topic. It's topical, it's timely, it's useful, so go to definitivedigest.com and subscribe for free right now. Hey, I've got a question for you. What's the best call to action button color on your website? Yeah, you probably didn't see that one coming, did you? Well, what's the best shape and sizes of your CTA buttons? And what copy gets more clicks? You know, these questions have interrupted my sleep patterns for weeks now, until I downloaded a helpful new email marketing guide from Emma called Why We Click, The Psychology Behind a Great Call to Action. You'll learn how applying just a little bit of brain science can transform your CTA buttons into small but mighty conversion powerhouses. It covers the button color, copy, and placement that helps skyrocket click rates. Check it out at myemma.com/click. You know, Emma helps marketers everywhere send smart, stylish email newsletters, promotions, and automated campaigns, and help us all rest a little easier knowing our email marketing is doing its job. So check out their new publication at myemma.com/click.
You, like all business leaders and communicators, have an important brand story to tell, but it's probably not being heard. There's just too much competition for our attention, unless, of course, you tell a better story. For over a year now, I have connected you with more than 50 international story artists through this podcast to help you craft your ideal brand story for the growth of your enterprise and your people. Did you know I'm also available to you for speaking engagements, brand and leadership story workshops, even for one-on-one Skype or telephone brand story strategy consults? Plus, you can begin clarifying your brand story right now by downloading the interactive DIY workbook at businessofstory.com. You see, your sales don't have to be comedies or tragedies. You can make them epic by clarifying your brand story and connecting with audiences and customers like never before. So download your workbook today at businessofstory.com. And if you're not 100% satisfied, I'll happily refund your money. And one last thought. Just remember, the most potent story you ever tell is the story you tell yourself. So make it a good one, my friends. Story on.
Welcome back to Business of Story and our amazing guest today, story artist Don Yeager. Now, I don't know if he's wincing at that term story artist, but you know, my job here is to connect you with authors and screenwriters and directors and producers from around the world, people who make a living selling stories every day so that we can learn as business leaders and communicators how to do a better job of connecting with our audiences on a very human level and, you know, empathetic level and share authentic, vulnerable stories that actually connect with people and move them to action. And speaking of that, Don, I got to tell you about one of my great exploits. Now, I grew up in one of seven kids. You know, these are seven kids in 9 years. So there was a lot of us running around. And we were growing up in the woods of North, you know, Lake Washington area up in Seattle area. And we all played a lot of sports. None of us were particularly good. We weren't like stellar athletes. My brother, that was a year and a half older than me, Steve, he was quite a good football player. But none of us went on to do, you know, anything real in sports. So we played, and you had the competition going on between the brothers, baseball and soccer and football and all that. And I was coming up through the baseball ranks in Little League and with all my buddies, you know, just like, you know, Hollywood movie. You're out there in the warm, long summer days in the Pacific Northwest playing baseball. And we got into the ninth grade, and that's when everybody levels up. You know, you kind of get out of the Little Leagues, and now you're into the quote-unquote majors. And I was playing for a really amazing team called Harms Paving. That's right. We weren't the Indians. We weren't the Yankees. We weren't the Cubs. We were Harms Paving because Harms Paving paid, you know, $500 to sponsor the team. And Fred Vogt, who owned Harms Paving, was our coach. So we were kind of a mismatch of misfits running around the Bothell-Woodinville area playing baseball. And there was all of 12 of us on the team. And we were lucky to have 9 show up for any one game. This particular game was, there was 10 of us. And as per usual, I was number 10 riding the bench. I didn't play a whole lot. I was an outfielder when they put me in there. I was kind of slow. I could catch balls, flies pretty well. Couldn't hit very well. They're not real fast, but still having fun with my butts. So we're sitting there. It's about the fifth inning. And, you know, the fans are in the stands, mom and dads, and you hear the kids whining, the little siblings, they're ready to go home, so they're being bought off with Cracker Jacks and Cokes and licorice whips, and you see the girlfriends in the stands or the girlfriend wannabes that are watching everyone play, and I'm just sitting there next to Fred Vogt of Harms Paving, our head coach. And he pulled out his thermos, opened it up, and it had tar on it from paving. I mean, you know, it's a working man's green thermos, and spun off that silver lid on top of it, poured himself a big, tall cup of hot, steaming coffee. And I was just sitting there, and I was dragging my feet through the dirt, you know, with cleats, making little trenches below me, sitting on my hands, just thinking, man, this really sucks. I never play. It's humiliating. What am I going to do to bide my time? So I did the only thing I could think of. And I looked over, and we had a ball bag. And in that ball bag, there was probably about, I don't know, 20 baseballs sitting in there. And Fred Vogt had this long keychain hanging off the side of him, as, you know, workers often do. And it had a little clip at the end of it, in addition to about the 30 keys that were hanging on it. So he was really concentrating on his cup of coffee. The whole team was out in the field playing. And I clipped that ball bag to his keychain. And then I slowly made my way down to the end of the bench at the far end of the dugout. And right then, I mean, you couldn't have planned it better, Don. There's a crack of the bat. Our competitor sends a ball singing down the third baseline right in front of us, and Fred jumps up like, you know, coaches do, and that ball bag grabbed hold of his back, of his side, and he tipped over, and that coffee went down the front of him. He caught himself before he hit the ground, and it was such a commotion that they threw the guy out of first base, but then all of the eyes on the field turned to the dugout, and my buddy Paul Herrick, who was playing shortstop, looked at me, and he like raised his shoulders like, what in the hell is going on there? Fred Vogt looks down. He's like, what happened? He sees the ball bag attached to his side, coffee down the front of him, and he sees me like a cowering little pup but laughing down at the end of the dugout, and he puts it all together in an instant. And I thought he was going to come unglued. He started losing it, but then he took a deep breath, and he started laughing. He took the ball bag off, actually came over and gave me a hug. I think he empathized with the position of, here's a kid that I never play that's sitting on the dugout, in the dugout, and I better keep an eye on him because who knows what that twisted mind of his is going to do next. I better get him in, and by golly, if I wasn't starting the next game. Now, I didn't hold that starting position, but I did start the next game.
Okay, so that had all the elements you'd want of a great individual story, right? I love that. I mean, right down to the tar on the side of his coffee container. We can feel it. We can imagine ourselves in that place. We've all been that player who didn't get off the bench. But knowing now that I have just spent this amount of time with someone that is the highest level of your athletic achievement. I'm going to go back and look for some Hall of Famer that I can go to work with this afternoon, just to even things out.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, all our kids and their athletic ability they got from my wife Michelle's side. Her father was Yankee pitcher Ali Super Chief Reynolds. Her uncle, I should say, was Ali Super Chief Reynolds, who threw for the Yankees in 1953. So all the exploits of our kids in sports really, I fear, come from her side of the family and not mine.
I love it. Well, but by the way, if just listening to that, again, I kept ticking off, you know, what's the general theme of your presentation here? And it's your piece here. And it's about the idea of how do we tell a story that inspires others or that reminds others what it is that the key is, it's funny. I'm sorry. I'm all over the place here, but thinking about a conversation I had a couple of years ago at NSA. They actually have a sports, they have a sports and celebrity breakout period where if you're a former athlete or you're a celebrity of some kind, you can actually end up in this room for a half day learning how to tell your story. And I was invited to talk to them, for a while. And a significant professional baseball player. I won't get into who it was, but there was like this entire discussion where at the end of it, when I said, and the key to the entire art of storytelling is that at the end of it, you have to make it usable for the person listening, right? You have to make your story come home. And you did that right at the end, right? You wrapped your arms, he wrapped his arms around you. He felt some empathy for you, which is the key, which is a running theme in our entire presentation here.
Mm-hmm. You have to make it usable. I love that line.
Right. But this player looked at me at the end and his eyes got big and it was this aha moment. And he said, "You mean my stories have to have a point?" And I got it. You know, that's one of the great challenges. It's one thing to be able to tell an engaging story. It's one thing to be able to kind of, tell the story of scoring on Michael Jordan. Did I mention that? It's one thing to tell the story of how that happened and do it in a way that's fun or funny. But at the end of the day, it's only good for others if it ultimately is good for others, right? And so that's, I think, maybe the most important and most often lost element in storytelling, right? Many people are good at weaving dialogue in, which is a real lost art too. Like, how do you make people feel like they're in the conversation with you? Some people are good, as you were in that discussion, of painting a picture that makes me feel like I'm sitting on that bench, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, your cleats running through the dirt, all of that, right? You could argue that's unnecessary detail, but in every way, everything you said there put me in that seat, which was, that's great. But at the end of the day, the best stories mean something to the people that you're sharing them to. They in some way relate to the people you're sharing them to. And so I think I couldn't imagine a better way to kind of bring all this home for those who are listening, because that's the real lost art, and that's the gift. If you can be thoughtful in those areas, you can change the world.
What inspired that story, it just sprang to life in my mind, was a few weeks ago, and I wrote it, I put it up on Medium, and it goes into, you know, much greater length. Is my friend Paul Herrick, who was on the team, he was the shortstop, the best athlete on the team. He is now coaching Little League up in Seattle, and he was telling me that, what he teaches his kids, and he's dealing, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds up there, and he says, you know, it's not about winning the tournament. It's not about winning the championship. It's about winning the day. So just come out here today and win the day. Whether we win or lose, make this day a winning day for you. And I thought, that's what, in my mind, that day was a winning day for me. I was not on the field, but I had some fun with our coach, and I won that moment. So, Don, in wrapping, what can we, do you have 1, 2, 3 tips that us, you know, again, business leaders, communicators can do just to get our heads wrapped around? Now, we know about empathy. I really appreciate the struggle. I like that idea of opening with humor and lightening, you know, when you're the tension in a room if you're going into interview. But when we're actually assembling our stories, is there a couple things that we should pay attention to?
So I hate to sound formulaic, but I will tell you that I think that if you were to look at many of the books that I've written with everybody from, like we talked about with Walter Payton or Michael Orr, the kid that was the centerpiece of The Blind Side, or John Smoltz, the Hall of Fame baseball pitcher, or John Wooden, one of the things that you'll find in almost every one of them is somewhere in the opening, I take you to a place in their life where, you know, which I think is the best part of most storytelling, is take people to a place where there's a fork in the road, right? Something happens and a choice sends you in one of two directions, and making, because then the choice becomes kind of the discussion point. If you can take people there early in any story, right? Because then all of us have forks in our roads. Most of them have them multiple times a day, right? Where we have to make choices that are going to affect outcomes. So the ability to kind of humanize the subject that you're talking about by bringing them immediately to a fork, you know, don't start with, I've never written anything chronological in my life because I don't believe that that's the way people think. I'm focused on putting people as best I can into an understanding of the life of someone else. That's my art form. That's my, to use your story artist phrase. It's doing that. And I think the best place that you can gain empathy for the person that I'm writing about is for you to see them in that fork in the road moment. So look for that. The second piece is the use, and I referenced it earlier, of dialogue, right? It's putting your subject or even yourself into a conversation, and as you're doing it, being able to have the audience follow the conversation with you. They understand who's saying what to whom and why. You know, usually you can't put more than two people in the conversation, but if you can do it in a way that allows people to feel like they're hearing this happen, they can, again, people respond best to stories they can see themselves in, and you're putting them in the story through the use of dialogue. I watched a master of this a few months ago. I shared a stage with a man named Bo Eason, who played the NFL for a number of years, and now does a lot of advising to people in storytelling. And I watched him from the stage. He's now an actor, and he went on and did a one-man play on Broadway and all this stuff. But I watched him actually carry out a conversation in which he stepped from one place to the other for each of the people he was modeling in the conversation. Mm. And you watch that happen, and as theatrical as it was very obvious, you know, who was doing what and where the conversation was going. And so that he actually took it to an extreme I don't normally go to, but he did it really, really well. And then the last piece is about, the fine details of a moment, you know, the tar on the side of the coffee canister, right? The clip on the edge of his belt, all of those, when you put details that, I guess the clip was necessary to the story because it was important to, you couldn't clip the baseballs to anything other than that. But the idea of actually putting, I have a better feeling for who that coach was because of the tar on the side of his coffee container, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't just the owner of a company, though you wore his shirt. He was a worker, right? He was a gritty SOB, and that's at least what I felt as I heard you tell that story. And so when you can find those little details, you heard me at NSA tell a story about visiting a prison cell,
mm-hmm.
With one man, with an NFL football player, to go meet the man that killed that player's mother. And when I tell you the story, I describe for you where everyone is sitting in the room. Why? Because I want you sitting in the room with me, right? I don't dwell on it. I don't go for 5 minutes about where everybody's sitting, but I do it in just enough detail that you're in the room with me. And I'm going to hope you felt that, because that's the goal of good storytelling.
Yeah, and you did it beautifully. I mean, I was literally on the edge of my seat during that presentation. What book did that come out of?
It was a book called Running for My Life.
Yes.
A player by the name of Warwick Dunn.
Right. Played for Tampa Bay.
Played for Tampa Bay, correct.
Yeah, great. All right, last question for you, Don. You might be familiar with it. What habit or characteristic separates you from everyone else?
I will tell you, I think it's, the importance of, I'm so vigilant about who's in my inner circle. I'm back to Coach Wooden. Coach Wooden once said to me, you will never outperform your inner circle. You'll never be better than the people around you. So be around the best people you can be. And so I'm constantly thinking about my circle and about who I spend my time with, because I it's the one thing I have most control over. And so I'm focused on my circle, and by surrounding myself consistently by people who push me, who encourage me, who challenge me, I think I'm a better me every day.
Well, and that's one of your 16 characteristics of greatness. I see you've got a picture of Wooden here, rubbing elbows. They understand the value of association.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Well, I would tell you, so it's the one that has meant the most to me over the course of my career. Since I really grew to understand it, 15 or so years ago, it's a driver in everything I do.
Well, even more of a privilege for me to have you take the time to be on the show this morning. So I really, really appreciate it. Don, where can people learn more about you, and what books do you have that are just hot off the press that we can be using to help become champions in our own line of work?
Sure. So my most recent book is just come out a couple of months ago, called Great Teams. It's about the habits of high performing teams. It's an extension of the book you referenced earlier about greatness. It's about what we can do to create better environments, better teams in our business, our workplace, our families, and even in our athletic teams, if that's where you're driven. But what are the habits of the best teams I've been able to study, and what can they teach us? So that's the book that I would love for anyone on this call to, anyone that's listening here to reach out to. That'd be great. And my personal, the best way to reach me personally is through my website, and it's just donyaeger.com, donyaeger.com.
Oh, fantastic. And you've been at NSA for a while now. I see you are a certified speaking professional, which is not an easy thing to achieve.
Just happened this year.
Just this year. Oh, so yeah. You just got moved in along with Jay Baer.
I'm a big fan of Jay's work.
That's awesome. And I'm fairly new to NSA. I'm starting my speaking career, and one day I envision me and you sharing the stage. I don't know where that's going to be, but I hope that that happens one day. I'm going to make that happen one day.
I would love that. That'd be great. Just as long as it's not on a little league field, and if so, I'm not wearing a clip on my belt. That's for sure.
Well, keep an eye on me. Don't get me bored. That's when trouble happens. But thank you, Don, so much for joining us today on Business of Story.
Park, thank you.
It's been a real honor. And thank you all for tuning into this episode. If you want more storytelling tools, tips, and techniques, please visit me at businessofstory.com. You know, my job here is to reignite within you that one true superpower we all possess, that power of story. And I do that with amazing guests like Don. So thank you for listening. And again, if you like what you're hearing, please go to iTunes. Let me know about it. Let the world know about it. Give us your star ranking. And if there's a guest or a topic that you're interested in, please send me a note at park@businessofstory.com. I'm always there, attentive, looking, reading, and willing to bring really interesting story artists on the show to help you advance your missions, social, professional, personal, further, faster through the power of story. So thanks for listening. Join us again next week when we will have another story artist for you to learn from and live through. And until then, have a wonderful life.
Thanks for tuning in to The Business of Story. Don't forget there are terrific free storytelling resources for you at thebusinessofstory.com, where you'll also find the complete show archive. The Business of Story is sponsored by Emma and by Convince and Convert, and is produced by Convince and Convert Media. Find more great shows like The Business of Story at marketingpodcasts.com, the first search engine for marketing podcasts. Podcast imaging by audiobag.com.